the latest from the world of technology. This is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Welcome to the Tech Guide Podcast for episode 30. It's great to be with you again. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. My name is Stephen Fenwick and I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. Plenty to talk about this week, starting with the Galaxy Note 2 from Samsung, the global gig hotspot, which can be used around the world, and a hands-on look at the upcoming Sony Xperia Z. In other news, we'll reveal how Vodafone has changed the way it charges customers for data usage, and we'll check out the internet security predictions for 2013 and wrap it up with Facebook's new graph search feature. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Plenty to talk about right here on Tech Guide, so let's get on with it. Well, Samsung are the world's number one mobile phone manufacturer, ahead of Apple. And the reason for their success is due to a number of products. One of them was the Galaxy S3, which was launched in mid-2012. And another reason for their success is for their Note range of smartphones. We saw the original Note in 2012. And in late 2012, we saw the follow-up, the Note 2, and it was released as a 4G product through Telstra and Optus and also through Vodafone. And it is a large smartphone. I've called it in my review a Galaxy S3 on steroids. It looks very similar design, similar sort of curved look and styling, but it has a much larger 5.5-inch screen. Now, this is, a lot of people call it a cross between a phone and a tablet. It is a very generous screen size, and I've reviewed it on Tech Guide, and I quite like this device. I'm a big fan of the big screen. A lot of people may find it a little unwieldy, but for all the people who were amazed at the size or surprised at the size of the device, were soon mesmerized. They quite enjoyed using the device. It also comes with an S Pen stylus, so you can write directly on the screen, as well as it being your normal smartphone, the ability to download apps. It's running Android 4.1 Jelly Bean operating system as well. And it is a very well-rounded Android device. Now, a lot of the features that I really enjoy with the Note 2 have to do with the use of the S Pen. Now, I'm a note taker. I'm a journalist. I often take notes. And the Note 2 made it very easy, hence its name, of course, the Note 2, made it very easy to jot down notes and save those notes and even share those notes. So it's not just a static piece, like writing on a static piece of paper that, that's the end of the line. That's all you can do with it once it's written on that piece of paper. But the notes on the Galaxy Note 2, you are able to share them. You are able even to write on photographs, annotate all kinds of other documents, even maps, you name it. But a lot of other features too. The ability to clip out parts of pictures and text to save them in a scrapbook. But another feature that I like too, and this takes advantage of the large screen on the device, was the ability for multi-view. Now that's the multi-window capability, where you can actually run two apps side by side. And this is a handy feature if you wanted to keep an eye on email as well as on Facebook or your gallery or things like that. There's a select number of apps that you can actually run side by side on the Note 2, either in portrait mode, which is upright, or in landscape mode. I turn the phone on its side. There's a photo on Tech Guide. So you can run two apps side by side in the picture on Tech Guide. There's actually, on the left-hand side is the Tech Guide website, and on the right-hand side is the Facebook app. So if you can surf the web and browse Facebook at the same time. and it's all thanks to that large screen size, the 5.5-inch screen. Now, there are several features to go through, including AirView, which is a really cool feature to do with the which you use with the S Pen. Now, what the AirView allows you to do, you can actually preview emails and calendar entries and images simply by hovering the AirView, the S Pen's nib, across, over the top of the screen. And what happens when it's close to the screen? A small blue dot appears. And if that blue dot happens to fall across an email, it will then open a window so you can actually read the contents of that email without having to actually open up the app or even open that actual email itself. You can even do the same for the subject line of the email as well. Very real time saver, this one. If you're looking for a particular email but don't have time to open up several emails, you can simply hover the pen in AirView to get a preview of that document or that email. A really, really handy device. The S Pen's very responsive as well. Really, really easy to write with. Real time, like you're writing with a real pen and a real piece of paper. Really good for those who want to take notes. Now, for note takers and power users too. Power users, the battery life is excellent, and that's one advantage of having a large device is that you get a large battery. Now, the battery easily lasted a day and a half for our usage, and that was under heavy usage. So that's good news for power users. I know a lot of people have been grumbling about the smaller smartphones, the iPhone and other devices barely lasting a day. But the iPhone, the Note 2 doesn't seem to have that problem, and it's got quite a hefty battery on board, which is good news for those heavy users. Now, this really dwarfs the iPhone 5. I've also run a picture of the Galaxy Note 2 beside the iPhone 5. In fact, the iPhone 5 fits inside the area of the Galaxy Note 2 screen. Even though iPhone 5 has a 4-inch screen, this 5.5-inch screen on the Note 2 really, really makes the iPhone 5 look like a midget. But what I really also liked about the Note 2 was the camera. The camera is 8-megapixel quality, and it takes really, really cool images, really nice color representation, pretty accurate. In bright light especially, it took really, really nice images. There's actually a panorama shot that I shot while I was in Los Angeles. That's actually taken at Universal Studios, looking out over the San Fernando Valley from the Universal Studios. So there are a number of nice photo modes, including best face. Now, this, as its name suggests, you can shoot a group shot, and what it does, it shoots a burst of up to 10 images, and you can go back and choose the best face. Actually, it shoots a burst of 8 shots, but you can then select the best face for every person in the shot out of those 8 shots and combine them into the one best picture. So you're not having to retake that image where all your friends back in the frame again. The Galaxy Note 2 is available now. It's priced at $899, or as most people would do, it is available on a plan through Telstra, Optus, and Vodafone. Now, it is 4G for Telstra and Optus. One of the other really cool features is that 4G connectivity, as was the processor. I forgot to mention, it's a quad-core processor, which offers really zippy performance for a device like this. You think with a screen of this size, it really needs a decent processor to power it, and it does have that in the form of the quad-core 1.6 gigahertz processor, and this is evident across the board. The processing power is incredible. It's a good demonstration of the processing power, actually, is the ability to play a high-definition video and then shrink it into a smaller window and run it on any part of the home screen and still operate the rest of the Note. So you can have the home screen open or another app open, and this video is still playing at the same time. That's multitasking, if I've ever seen it. Pretty dramatic. Really, really good quality screen. The videos look terrific on that screen. So if you're an Android user, you're an Android fan, you like the larger screen, then you can't go past the Galaxy Note 2. I've reviewed it at techguide.com.au. Feel free to check it out. I've given it 4.5 stars out of 5. I'm very impressed with this device. If you're an Android fan, a Samsung fan, this is definitely one to check out.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
Now, anyone who's ever travelled overseas will know that data roaming costs can be quite high. Now, many of us know not to use our data roaming on our Australian SIM cards while overseas. Those of us who have chosen to ignore that and decided to go ahead and use our data overseas have come home to quite astronomical bills. So what is the solution? Well, there's a company called Global Gig who have just released a device. It's a Wi-Fi hotspot designed for travelers. Now, the beauty of this device is that it's pretty small, fits in the palm of your hand, and it can you can use it in the US, the UK, and right here in Australia. So for those who are frequent travelers or travelers to those two popular destinations, the Global Gig could be the solution for your data needs. Now, when you arrive in the US, for example, I reviewed this device. I used it while I was in Las Vegas and Los Angeles. I was in Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show, and the Global Gig allowed me to connect my up to five devices. I connect two smartphones, a tablet, and a laptop to the internet using Global Gig. Now, in the US, it connects through the Sprint network, so offers you only maximum is 3G. But the small device can be in your pocket, in your bag, and can connect up to five devices. So it creates a little Wi-Fi hotspot, and then you connect to the Global Gig, and which then in turn connects you to the internet. A really handy way to stay connected. But the most attractive thing, apart from its convenience and the ability to connect multiple devices, is the price. Now, the device itself is $129, and it comes with a SIM card. So once you've purchased that product, SIM's on board, then all you need to do is then choose from one of three monthly plans, which don't have any lock-in contracts. And they start at $25 for 1 gig, $39 for 2 gig, and $49 for 5 gig for the hardcore power users. Now, that data allowance lasts for 30 days and is pretty competitively priced when you consider if you were to use your own data overseas, using 5 gigs of data overseas, it's going to be a lot more than $49. But look, it is also the advantage too is a lot of people choose to buy a SIM card when they travel overseas. But finding a SIM card plan, if you say you're traveling to the US that has data, that has calls and texts at a reasonable price, I think the cheapest you're going to look at if you're paying per day, a lot of these are per day. I know T-Mobile have a plan where you pay $20 for the SIM card and then $3 per day for unlimited calls, texts, and data. But if you were to times 30 by 3, that's $90 plus 20. So you're looking at $110 for a month of usage, unlimited data usage on T-Mobile in the US, whereas the Global Gig, you can get 5 gig for $49. Now, 5 gig is a lot of data. You'll never get through it. Now, what you can't do with Global Gig is make calls. So you can't use it as a phone. You can't put the SIM card in your phone to make calls. But what it does allow you to do, because it creates a data connection, you can make calls through other apps like Viber, Skype, even FaceTime calls. I made some FaceTime calls from my iPhone to my home here in Sydney to my family. So that's a way around the calling issue. You can take advantage of the data and make your connection that way. Now, on the downside, the Global Gig is the battery life is not that crash hot. It only lasts between 3.5 to 4 hours. So if you've got it on constantly, you've got a few devices connected, it's going to burn through the battery in between 3 to 4 hours. But you know, the good thing is it's easy to recharge. It comes with a USB charger, and it does take a little while to recharge. So I think when overseas, maybe best turn it off when you're not using it. If you're in a Wi-Fi hotspot, for example, and you don't need the Global Gig, best thing to do would be maybe to switch it off. One other downside, it gets really hot. In my pocket, I could feel it, the heat of this device through my pocket, or even in my suit, my coat pocket. I could feel how hot this thing got. You could cook an egg on this thing almost. It was very, very warm to touch. And another reason why the battery drains so quickly, because it gets so hot. Heat means power. And when it's too hot, you're losing power. And that there's no two ways about that. But look, overall, it is really good companion if you're a frequent traveler, if you need to be connected, and you can also connect several devices. You can connect up to five devices. A really good way to control your costs while you're traveling. So best check it out. If you want to take a look at my review, you can do at techguide.com.au. Now, one little device we took a sneak peek at while we were at the Consumer Electronics Show, a very impressive device this was Sony's new smartphone, the Xperia Z. This was unveiled at the Sony press conference during CES, and I think is one of the first Sony mobiles that's really going to hit the mark in terms of delivering on what it promises. Now, in terms of its connectivity to other Sony products, it's going to deliver that as well in terms of NFC, being able to share content, even control other devices, look for other content. It's really going to be one of these devices, I think, that's going to be one of the standout products in the smartphone market anyway in 2013. While I was lucky enough to get my hands on the device, I was at the Sony stand, and the best way you could look at it on the stand was actually behind glass, but I had was fortunate enough to actually get the device in my hands and to have a play around to try the device. Now, it's very impressive. It reminded me a little bit of the iPhone, as a matter of fact. It's the same kind of flat, monolithic type design. It's got a 5-inch screen, quite thin. It's only 7.9 millimeters thick, and it has an excellent 13-megapixel camera. It's running Android 4.1. Has that 5-inch screen, by the way, is full HD. It's got a quad-core processor under the hood, and that 13-megapixel camera also comes with 4G connectivity. But the 13-megapixel camera is also capable of shooting full HD video, and it is also the first video camera, the first camera on a mobile phone that can shoot video that can also include, that has HDR, which is high dynamic range, and the ability to shoot in front of a bright light and still make out your subject quite clearly. The camera was very impressive. Now, on top of all that, the Sony Xperia Z is also waterproof and dustproof. There's a video that I've embedded on my story on Tech Guide that shows a person actually washing the device off using a bottle of water. So no more worrying about maybe spilling a drink on this device and worrying that it's going to be totally useless after that. I think it's going to be pretty durable. Glass front and back, it's pretty attractive looking device. And also, don't forget, this is one of the first products that I've seen from Sony that actually combines technology from across the company. It's got the Bravia engine for the screen. It's also got their camera technology for the camera. And don't forget, it also brings in Walkman technology for their audio. So if you want to listen to music, not to mention the content, music, movies. It's also a gaming device that's PlayStation certified. So it's bringing all these great aspects of Sony into this one product that I think is going to sit front and center in the Sony story in 2013. And I mentioned already that NFC is going to play a big part as well. And this is going to be able to allow users to really easily share content and also control those other devices, as I mentioned. The Xperia Z is available in March, so keep an eye out for that. If you want to read that hands-on review, it is right there at Tech Guide. We can't wait to March to actually get our hands on the device, do a full review, and that is not too far away. March is only a couple of months away. The Sony Xperia Z, one of those devices I think you're going to have to keep a close eye on.
Now, a Tech Guide news update.
Some news out of Vodafone. Now, Vodafone have been struggling of late. They've had their network woes and they've lost a lot of customers, and they're doing their best to claw their way back. They're going to launch a 4G network this year as well. So they're really in line to win back a lot of customers. Now, one thing that they are doing to win back those customers, or actually to keep their current crop of customers, is change the way they charge customers for data usage. Now, this story came about as the result of a lot of customer feedback. Some vocal Vodafone customers, especially prepaid customers, were being charged per megabyte. Now, the way that telcos charge for data, the minimum block charge, as they call it, in this case for Vodafone prepaid, is a megabyte. So even if you used 20 kilobytes, the minimum charge you're going to be slugged with is for a megabyte. So not only are you being overcharge for only using a minimal amount of data, it's going to burn through your data allowance a lot quicker. Now, as a result of this, the prepaid customers actually they gave some Vodafone some pretty loud feedback about this, and Vodafone has actually listened to this advice. They've actually done a survey, and not surprisingly, there was overwhelming response to changing this data, the way data is charged. And what they've done as a result, they've now changed their model to go from per megabyte charge to a per kilobyte charge. So now that actually means that the minimum data session that Vodafone can now charge people for can be as low as 1 kilobyte. So if you used 3 kilobytes, you're going to be charged for 3 kilobytes. In the past, especially if you're a prepaid customer, even using 3 kilobytes meant that the minimum charge you're going to get slugged for was for a megabyte. So now this has all changed. Now it's across the board, across all of their plans. Prepaid were getting slugged the hardest. Their minimum data session was a megabyte. It's now down to a kilobyte. The others went from 25 kilobytes now down to one. And others were already 1 kilobyte. But now across the board, Vodafone, minimum data session, 1 kilobyte. So what it means is you're only going to pay for the data you use. So that data that your allowance is going to last you a lot longer. Rather than you being slugged a megabyte at a time, you're only going to be slugged a kilobyte at a time, and it's going to last you even longer. Now, did you or someone in your household get a new tablet or smartphone for Christmas? Well, with the amount of mobile devices now connecting to the home network, a solid Wi-Fi connection is more important than ever. So if you've experienced any annoying Wi-Fi dead spots around your home when using your mobile or wireless devices, Netgear has a range of Wi-Fi extenders that will boost your existing wireless signal and improve your online experience. Universal compatibility means you can keep all of your current wireless equipment, and CD-less installation makes setup easy on mobile devices. Netgear has a Wi-Fi extender to suit any size household, from the compact wall plug Wi-Fi booster for mobile up to the 4-port dual band Wi-Fi range extender, which is perfect for streaming HD video content and maximizing your online home theater experience. So if you want to stay connected and boost your Wi-Fi coverage to improve your online experience in every corner of your home, check out Netgear's Wi-Fi range extenders at netgear.com.au/boost my Wi-Fi. Well, 2013 is already upon us, and already people are making predictions for what we can expect to see in terms of internet security and the threats that are going to come our way this year. Yes, it's the cat and mouse game continues, and cyber criminals will be going after a lot of different ways and methods to try get into your data to take advantage of this and exploit it. Now, AVG, a well-known internet security company, has looked at the landscape and come up with their areas which they see the top 5 threat areas for 2013. The first is privacy. And they think that this is going to come, that privacy is going to be compromised through users viewing ads on PCs, smartphones, and tablets. Now, as we know, ads are going to be a lot more aggressively targeted to individuals. They use things like browser tracking, social media trawling, and geolocation data. So all of these are used, usually without the user's consent or without their knowledge. They're going to try and crack these different methods to try get into your data and try to find out more about you. Identity theft could be a result of this. So privacy is one area. Now, another area they've identified is cloud security. We're using cloud services quite frequently now, things like Dropbox, iCloud, SkyDrive, CloudDrive, which is an Amazon product, Google Drive. They've already had malware attacks in 2012, and the potential for risk is there in 2013. Now, you imagine how much data is stored up there. A lot of people's personal information all in one spot makes it an easy target for cyber criminals. So let's hope the people that we are subscribing to look after our data in the cloud are up to the job and can keep those cyber criminals away. Other areas include mobile threats. Google's Android operating system, according to AVG, is also going to be a target for malware. So expect to see some on your smartphone and tablet. So if you need to take some security measures, it would be a good idea to do that in 2013, because the number of threats on the mobile are only going to increase. The other areas to look at, PC threats, of course. Windows 8 has now been released, and hackers are going to try to find new and interesting ways to exploit any weaknesses there. And as we're all new to Windows 8 as well, you can be pretty sure there's going to be a lot of people looking for vulnerabilities. Also, be sure to there's also going to be a lot of infected websites designed to exploit vulnerable computers, the computers which, believe it or not, will not running security software. There are some people who still not have any security software out there. The last one is mobile to PC threats. Now, the growing trend of BYOD, and that's short for bring your own device, where a lot of users bring their own smartphone or tablet to the workplace and connect it to that corporate network, there again is going to be a potential danger area where users could actually spread malware from their own devices to the corporate network and create a point of weakness there. So it's something that people, especially corporates who are accepting these BYOD devices, the BYOD trend in their workspace, something they're really going to have to monitor and expect also more attacks against mobile banking applications. That's mobile banking apps are quite popular. We do more banking on our apps than ever before. And cyber criminals see this as an opportune time, an opportune way to try to hack into our information. So best be vigilant there. Run your internet security software. You can't take any chances in 2013. They're after our information. We've got to try to stop them at the door.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Well, Facebook are in the news once again, and this time it's to release a new search engine. It's called Graph Search, and what this tool is designed to do is actually it's designed to explore your own network. So rather than it being just a blanket web search, Google style, it's going to be more a search of the people within your network. So you might search for restaurants your friends like, movies your friends like, places your friends have visited, things like that. So you can actually mine your own network for these sorts of information. Now, people often are more likely to accept recommendations from friends than actually listen to advertisements and do what ads say. So that whole people power, trusting what your friends are doing, trust what your friends like, liking what your friends like. Friends can be very influential in this area, which is one of the reasons why Facebook set up this search in the first place. The four areas it's going to concentrate on are people, photos, places, and interests. So all of this information can be found out. You can even narrow down the search by gender, by the relationship, by their employer. You may want to discover people who in your own work who work for the same company who like the same things as you, so you can connect to other people in that way as well. Now, I think privacy has been discussed here, where it's going to respect people's privacy. It's going to stay within Facebook. This is not going to put Google out of business. This is not going to threaten Google as a search engine. They're still going to handle all the web search. Facebook Graph Search is going to be an internal Facebook search that will allow people to discover various things about their friends and what they're liking and what they're doing, even looking at photos that they've put up over the years as well. So rest easy, Google. Facebook aren't out to put you out of business. They've got a product that's going to run in conjunction with what you're doing. Facebook Graph Search, you can be a part of it. You can go to facebook.com/graph search to put yourself up on the user list. It's going to be a beta, which will be rolled out slowly before the full product rollout. The reason that it's in beta form, they want to get feedback from users to improve the service once it's ready to go full on, full time for the full rollout. So check that out if you want to be a part of it. facebook.com/graph search.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
A question I was asked recently was from a user who was new to, made a return to buying a computer in his home, And he asked a very simple question, but a very important one. What is the best broadband plan for his needs? Now, by his needs, I mean the amount of data that he needs. Now, not everyone's a heavy data user. There's a lot of people who out there who are quite light data users, people who just mainly like to be connected, check email, get on the internet. They're not downloading large files, movies, music, things like that. They're just cruising the internet just to stay in touch with people. Now, for these users, there's a lot of deals out there that offer under 100 gigabytes of data, 50, maybe 10, 20 gigabytes of data. But my advice to this gentleman in particular was to check out the bundles that are offered by his home phone provider. Now, a lot of people may not have a home phone, so this would be probably not a good idea. But if you do have a home phone, check with Optus or Telstra, whoever your home phone is with, to see if you're able to bundle in your broadband plan with your phone plan. Now, in my case, I've in the Tech Guide offices here, I have an Optus broadband, a cable connection. I've also got an Optus home phone. And what I've done is bundle those services together so that I can get 500 gigabytes of data allowance along with unlimited calls and all my telephone needs. Now, 500 gigabytes is necessary for me. I have three teenage kids, all very hungry internet users, probably use the internet more than I do, and that's saying something. So in my case, my household would be a heavy internet user. So we need a very high broadband data allowance, hence 500 gigabytes, which usually in a month we probably use, I reckon, about 300 gig, maybe a little bit more if it's during school holidays where the kids are home a lot more. But that is a plenty of data to go around. Now, for my friend who spoke to me about being a very light user, 500 gigabytes to him would be like trying to break an egg with a sledgehammer. Way too much data for him, probably paying for data he'll never use. So possibly look at plans that offer maybe 50 gig, 20 gig, around that point. Now, a lot of people don't realize that data usage also includes upload. So stuff that you upload, so large files, or if you're sharing content on the internet, that uploaded file also counts towards your data limit. So if you happen, for example, to download 5 gigabytes of content and upload 4 gigabytes of content, your data allowance has been slugged for 9 gigabytes. Something to keep in mind. People think, okay, sending is okay, but it's not. It is counted towards your data allowance. Also doing things like watching YouTube videos, that you also chews through your data. People think, well, I don't download files, I just watch a lot of YouTube. Well, hello, watching a lot of YouTube chews through the data. You may not have a file at the end of it, but that data that has streamed through your browser is counting against your data allowance. So keep an eye on that. If you're watching a lot of YouTube per month, I'd say you're not a light internet user. You are more a medium to high internet user, because that's one of the highest ways to burn through your data allowance. So some advice there. Check your broadband needs. Check your data allowances. There is ways to monitor your data, of course, if you are going close. Usually what is the case is if you do go over your data limit, not many companies actually charge you for excess data now, but rather they throttle back your connection to painfully slow speeds till your billing cycle comes around once again, and you can then go back to normal. But pretty good advice there. If you need to a lot of data, go for the bargains, go for the deals. If you're not too fussed on how much data you get, then maybe an entry level plan is best for you. And that's the end of another show. If you need any more information about anything we spoke about today, you can find it at our website, techguide.com.au. And we also would love to hear from you, and you can get in touch with us right here by emailing us at info@techguide.com.au. We also need help desk questions, so feel free to fire those questions into the Tech Guide forum. You can access that at techguide.com.au, the right-hand side of the menu Bar is our forum where users can upload their questions, and our many readers are happy to jump in there and answer your questions, including myself. I often jump in there, answer questions for people, offer them the information they're looking for, maybe help solve a problem of theirs, and you never know, you could end up being read out right here on the Tech Guide podcast. Well, that's it for episode 30. Thanks for listening. We look forward to your company again next week. So in the meantime, stay safe and stay connected.